Hey guys, this week's episode of A Glass for Every Palate comes with a special gift. Right now, for my listeners, we are offering a 50% off discount on your annual subscription to Somm TV. So go to SommTV.com right now, sign up for an annual membership, use code, wait for it, Shakera, S-H-A-K-E-R-A, for 50% off your annual subscription. That way you won't miss any episodes of any of the amazing shows, including mine, on the Somm TV streaming platform. Hey guys, welcome to this week's episode of A Glass for Every Palate. I am so stoked about today's guest. As most of you know, that outside of wine, my career is actually in tech, specifically in healthcare IT. So I'm super excited to geek out with a fellow techie today. The theme of this week's episode is innovation, and my guest is Heine Zachariasen, the CEO and founder of Vivino. Now, I don't care how savvy you are, at some point in your wine journey, either you had it on your phone or you know someone on your phone that has Vivino. So today's discussion is going to be a super, super interesting conversation about the mind of an innovator, the mind of somebody that sees something like, hey, this doesn't exist. Let me create it. And I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. All right. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of A Glass for Every Palate here on the Somm TV podcast network. Today's guest is so exciting. I think you guys can hear me smiling because this is the perfect collision of my worlds. We're talking about one of the most, in my opinion, the most revolutionary piece of technology in wine. So my guest today is the CEO and founder of Vivino, an app that I know you all have. Heine Zachariasen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. And that was a fantastic introduction, I must say.
Well, I mean, it's true. You know, I think that we saw this type of evolution in food earlier with the advent of apps like Yelp and, you know, OpenTable and all of that stuff. But wine reviewing has kind of been this secret society of like Jedis that get to say what wines are good and what isn't. And then along comes Vivino and just disrupts that completely. Was that your original intention? No, right?
Well, my intention was really quite simple, right? My intention was that when I walk into a supermarket and want to buy a wine, I want to buy the best possible wine. Look, I didn't really know the wine industry that well back then. I probably heard about Robert Parker, but I mean, that was the extent of it. And what I really wanted is just to help people drink better wine and not just rely on a funny label with something pink on it. I want to buy this wine because it has a funny label and maybe a price. I wanted to change that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that single-handedly, you've created a much more savvy set of wine drinkers because now they can go, oh, I had this last week and I did not like it. When did I remember about this? So if they see that again, it goes, let's talk a little bit about the disruption, right? Because let's talk about wine in the States, right? It was a very exclusive community and you had to know a certain lingo to be able to speak to anyone. Like, did you have problems when you were trying to articulate what you wanted? Were you kind of a little intimidated or put off by the lingo?
I think so, yes. I would say first, the lingo in Europe maybe is a little bit less so. It's just a little bit more common in Europe than it is in the US. So there's some difference there. But this is exactly what we want to break. We do not want to create distance. We want this to be as close as possible, right? We want everyone to be included in this. Wine is for everyone. It's not meant to be, you know, something creates distance, you know, it should bring people together.
Yeah, that's always such an interesting like juxtaposition to look at where wine is so ingrained in European culture as community and as a part of coming together. Like, it's just not the same here in the States. And so the way that we approach, you know, introducing people and getting them into it is so different. So fun question for you. When you started getting into wine, you had this idea, you start developing this technology, you start meeting other wine people. What was the first off-putting thought or experience you had stepping into the wine world?
I probably realized that I was still like on the early part of my journey, right? Meaning that what I drank definitely wasn't very fancy. I think this is pretty common for people that start drinking wine. You find some powerful Australian Shiraz and like finally something that tastes like something. And then you drink a lot of that and then you maybe go on a journey from there. There's nothing wrong with that. I think when it comes to off-putting and so on, when people start talking about terroir and so on, I mean, they don't think it's a long way from the wine in the glass. but for most people, it really is.
Yeah. But Vivino has helped so many people, right? Because for me, I mean, among my friends, the most challenging thing used to be, oh, Shakira, I had this wine. Okay.
Yes.
Oh, the label was blue.
Yeah, exactly. And there was something on it. There was something on it.
It had some words, but it was really, yeah, really good, right?
Yeah.
And even if you're trying to be somebody's ambassador, it's kind of like, it's, you got to give me a little more.
Yeah.
So the app that you develop, I mean, how simple is it? Sometimes we have wine geek moments, but I'm going to take this time to have a tech geek moment.
Yes.
The user experience of that app is really, really exceptional. So when you were conceptualizing it, like, what was the primary thing that you were thinking about? Was it about just, you know, being able to catalog all this data? Was it about making the interface user-friendly? How did we get to this remarkable app that we have today?
Yeah, it was really quite a journey, actually, because what you talk about now, remembering, we used that quite a lot in the beginning, right? Obviously, when it comes to the user interface, like being simple and clear and fast was always very, very important. But in the early days, we used a slogan that said, never forget another wine. And the reason why we did that was because we didn't have much else, right? So that feature was like, hey, you'll remember your wine you drank and so on, but it was never where we wanted to go. Where we wanted to go was to make sure you could make a decision on what's good and not so good, right? But we just didn't have the data. So we changed the pitch along the way from going to remember and then to reference and then moving forward to recommendation, right?
Mm.
So that's a journey in the how we see the product.
That's so amazing because I feel like that is kind of how a lot of people's wine journey goes.
Yeah.
It starts with a bottle that I enjoy, and so that's what I buy all the time, right?
Yes.
Then you branch out a little bit like, okay, well, I know that I like this grape, so now I'll try something else. And then you keep going and it goes, well, shoot, now I can tell other people about it. And that's really incredible. You know, wine in the last year has just, I mean, disrupt. We're going to use the word disrupt a lot because that's exactly what's taken place.
Yes, for sure.
Data-driven disruptions make me happy because it means that somebody saw this coming or someone had the data to see this coming. You know, as we look towards a world that is more inclusive and inviting, have industry leaders and marketing companies reached out to you guys to kind of get the data that you have? Because I mean, when I open the app, I use it a lot for tracking the exceptional amount of wine that's in my home. But I always find these data points like, this is in the top 6% of this particular wine sold in the world. That's data that I didn't even know I wanted, but it made me smile to have it.
Yeah.
So how have those relationships been? Have you found the industry and the people that are allegedly trying to be more inclusive, have they been interested in getting this data from you?
I would say somewhat, right? I would go to conferences and speak to the data about the data. I would go and meet with industry leaders and so on. I think it's a little bit late. Mm. I would have expected what you're saying, like, we're from the tech world, right? Your first thinking is like, yeah, they got to be hungry for this data. Some of them are, but most of them are less so. And the wine industry is like a fantastic industry, but obviously it's farmers and it's people that are passionate about the production of wine. Their thinking is not exactly like ours, right? But yes, we have more and more demand for the data, but I might have expected a little bit more. Funny thing is that other industries that are close by, like spirits and beer, they've come to us and say, hey, you should really do this. And the reason for that is because they are more tech, they're more brand, they're bigger, more sophisticated in that way, right?
Yeah.
So the wine industry is somewhat different in that sense.
It's interesting because I don't think that the winemakers are going to be the ones for the data. But when you think about kind of, you know, the big importing companies, right?
Yeah.
The data that Vivino can give them is like, yes, we know that you like that producer, but look at what our data is telling us about how people are receiving wines from that particular region.
Yeah.
You know, so if you want to really champion these wines, you're going to have to make a push.
Yeah.
Or you've got all of this wine from this place and people aren't loving it, but you have so few from this place and people go nuts for this.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of thing where sometimes I wonder, like, how much change do people actually want? And you're right. I think tech minded people are always pushing the envelope.
Yeah.
Like, you're always moving towards an unknown destination.
But tech people are coming in everywhere, right? Before you know it, you'll have a distributor that thinks like that because maybe the founder comes from the tech industry or something. But it could also be someone who made some money in the tech industry, goes up to Napa and says, now I want to build a winery. And they will think, okay, now I'm going to go to Vivino and ask them, hey, what should it actually taste like specifically and so on. So you can do a really data-driven approach to releasing new wines and so on. And we're seeing a little bit of that too. I think that's super interesting.
That's amazing. Take yourself out of your position and swap seats with a marketing company that markets wine that falls into the average consumer category here, somewhere under $25.
Yep.
What's the piece of data from Vivino or pieces of data that you think, man, you guys are missing out by not looking at this and really examining how you can pivot your business to reach a market like that?
So I think there's more transparency now, right? We don't really promote wines. We look at what we think is best for the user. And when you peel that apart and say, what does that actually mean? Well, that means quality towards value, right?
Yeah.
So if I was someone who could influence that, I would look at every single wine and every single category and say, are we priced right? Because if you have a 3.8 Chardonnay, our data will tell you exactly what that should be priced. If you lower the price a little bit there, maybe the sales would blow up, right?
Yeah.
Because now suddenly you hit the quality price rating that you should. So that could be a key data point for people to figure out and can really drive sales online.
Interesting. So I love food and I tend to not ever read Yelp apps and things like that because sometimes when you read what people wrote, I'm like, that's what that's supposed to taste like. You just don't like that. And that's fine.
Yes.
How do you respond to, you know, a question or a criticism of like, what separates someone from giving something a 3.9 versus a 4.1? Like, how do you help people understand like this number, this score has value and it's not just an arbitrary thing like all the other wine scores where somebody decides that this is a 92 versus a 95. What do you say to critics that challenge the validity of apps like this? And it's across food. It's Yelp, it's Zagat, it's all of these rating things that are consumer driven.
First, I would say that it's very different how we rate things. So I assume you would take an Uber once in a while, right?
Yep.
And what do you do there? Well, you give almost every ride 5 stars.
Yep.
That's how you do it, right? Then you go to the restaurant space, and I'm not going to judge you in any way here, but people do have a tendency to go very high or very low. And we're seeing a different thing there, right? We're seeing a really, really good distribution. And my theory is always, hey, I don't think people get as mad at a bottle of wine as they do at a waiter.
Yeah.
And there is some truth in that, right? That, you know, oh, it's fine. I didn't love it. I'll give it a 3.5 and so on. But when it comes to the validity of ratings, like I have very strong feelings. Like we tested them towards the experts. Once the community has spoken, once you have 20 ratings or something, it's really quite solid and more consistent than the raters because it's a lot of people and what comes out is really, really strong. One more comment. I could speak about this forever.
I love it.
But if you have something like, I don't know how to, Mourvèdre, how do you pronounce Mourvèdre?
Oh, Mourvèdre, the grape.
Mourvèdre, yeah. Yes, exactly. Something like, I think it has a little bit of a special taste, right?
It does.
And someone might taste it, not like it, give it a low rating, and that's fine. But the other people, the people that love Mourvèdre, they're going to keep drinking and rate it. And they're going to understand it. So those few scores, they're just going to be a small part of it. And then the Mourvèdre lovers are going to be there and keep rating it.
Ah, that's brilliant. I think that's the way things like Amazon work. And you're absolutely right. I am more forgiving of a bottle of wine that I cannot stand versus the memory.
People are horrible sometimes.
Yeah, like versus the memory of awful service somewhere. Like that's almost unredeemable. The grape still has a chance. The restaurant with me, probably not. But it's so interesting, you know, as we also dive into like some people post their pictures or things, or you can tell from the way they write. I love reading the descriptions sometimes and not identifying gender, but I can group these people use these words and these people use these words.
Yeah.
I can tell who's very into wine because the descriptions are extremely wine driven. But the funny thing is, I'm like, that doesn't make me want to drink it.
No.
It's the person that writes, oh my God, I thought I hated Chardonnay and then I had this and it was everything because those are the wines that are interesting. It's an interesting world that we're living in though. I think that predictive data is so beautiful now because it's really tracking what people do. It's patterns, right? Because I could just scan my bottles and never rate it.
Yeah.
But if I take the time to give a score and to write something, that's a really good indicator of what I think.
Yeah.
I want to know what you think next. What's the next step?
Yeah, no, you almost got into, you talk about predictive data. I don't know, have you looked at this thing we called Match for You?
No, not yet.
So this is something we released a few months ago, basically inspired by Netflix. One thing is having the rating of a wine, but what if I can say, no, for Shakira, it is 99% likely that she will like this particular wine. And basically our philosophy there is that, you know, we have all this wine data on one side, very specific now, taste, boldness, light, all those things very specific. And then we're learning more and more about the users, right? And we're putting those two things together. And then we built a predictable score and say, you know, you know, she's not going to like this one, but she is going to like this one. And that is launched in the app now. And I'm super excited about it. It's not perfect yet. We're on version 2 of it.
Okay.
But it's super interesting.
I mean, that's artificial intelligence telling me. Funny enough, I think a lot of sommeliers are going to be like, damn it, that's my job. That's what I've been trying to do. You know, people have their feelings on AI and all of that stuff, but so much of it takes away all the personal biases that might stop you from thinking someone will like something. So when it's purely data driven, you know, it gets different.
It does. But I agree with that, but I don't necessarily put you in a specific hole. It could also open your mind saying, well, you know what? We found that people that love specifically Napa Cab also love this kind of South African thing. Mm. And those connections can be hard to see. So I like that we can do those kinds of things too.
Yeah, it's wonderful. You do not track a lot of gender, age, or any of those things. Is that intentional or something you think you may one day really start to further drill down in the data based on those types of categories?
I think maybe. In the old days, we had a little bit. I think we got a little bit from Facebook when people had Facebook Connect and so on. So it could be. The argument I always say when people say, hey, don't you have all this demographic data? Then you can target things like, yeah, we could, but I know what they drink. That's the best way to target wine at them, right? I think that what we have for selling wine and giving people the best wine, hopefully is more important than their age or gender or whatever.
But that's so amazing because it's always interesting to see like almost these gift and curse dynamics, right? Like, so a wine marketing company probably wants that very specific data. They want to know that, okay, so in this state, in this market, we need to target women between age 32 and that's what they're looking for.
Yeah.
But your philosophy is, I don't care about any of that. Based on what this person has scanned and said that they like, I'm going to predict that they're going to like this, irrelevant of all of those other things.
If we were a marketing company, if we're going to sell cars or something, I think what you had there is really relevant, but that just isn't what we do right now. Although I will say there are some signs that we could probably link. If we know you drink Bollinger, maybe there's a really good chance that you'll drive one of these cars or be interested in what these cars, but we haven't done that yet.
Yeah, it's a gift and a curse because then if you start to see trends, then people are going to target. And if you target, you close off the world. So I understand why like somebody else would want that level of specificity, but not so much with you. So Vivino has gone from never forget a wine to remember what you drank to recommendations. It's now a marketplace where not only can I find a wine I love, score a wine the way I like it, but you can also tell me where I can buy it. I mean, that is revolutionary. What is the next idea that you may have all the way out there? Like, I think that one day we can loop this in too.
Yeah, I think obviously if we crack the knot of like personalization and really getting that right, I think that is like a massive step for the wine world. But the way I look at it when I look really, really far, I'm not like super specific right now. I look at what we want to be is, you know, you see us as an app and most people see us as an app, but really we're a data company, right?
Mm.
And when I look really, really far, I say, you know, every time you think about wine, I want you to think Vivino. I want you to think, okay, Vivino's going to help me make that decision. So our vision there, my vision there is really, okay, where is that going to be in the future? Are we going to have supermarket shelves? Are the ratings going to be on all those supermarket shelves? Are we going to have a new version of the Google Glass and you just look at things? And so wherever people make those decisions, that's where we want to be.
What a dynamic and agile business model. But I think that that is what serves communities best.
Yeah.
It's almost like the company is innovative and forward-thinking, but also reactionary.
Yeah.
So it's pivoting to what people are saying they want. And I love, love, love that. We'll have to do a conversation with you, Jason, and I so that we can have these very geeky tech, what am I even doing in this space conversations. I want to spend a little bit of time having fun and talking a little bit about your own wine journey and how it's grown over these last years and having doing this and creating this amazing data-driven company. So what's the first style of wine or grape or something that you remember actually enjoying and wanting to have more of?
I do remember that specifically. And I actually, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier. And I remember the style. I do remember the brand too, because I was really fascinated by this. And I think a lot of people have that, like they taste some wine and they taste some wine. It's like, yeah, whatever. And then something comes along and says, okay, this is interesting. And that could also be your age or whatever. But for me specifically, it was actually an Australian Shiraz.
Mm.
And it is a company called Molly Duker. And there's a really good chance you've seen it.
Of course. Absolutely. Did you know?
But it's like a 17% Shiraz. And it is crazy, right? And I think like, this is amazing. And I loved it. And I probably wouldn't drink it as much, but that's really where I started. And I was very excited about that.
Wow. And what is one that you remember that you just didn't like at all? And to this day, you might not like it.
Yeah, I don't want to insult any country or anything, but there's this Greek wine. Oh my God, what is it called? I can't remember.
Oh, Retsina.
Retsina, yes. I'm sorry, Retsina. We have quite a few people from Greece in our company. They're going to call me and say, yeah, you just had the wrong Retsina. And maybe I did, but I specifically remember that, like, yeah, I do not like this.
You're in good company. There are a lot of people. And you know, I never think that it's insulting to, it's not that. And I think that, you know, we all have things that we just don't like. Like, it just doesn't work for us at all. I have not yet found a Retsina that I enjoy either.
Still looking.
I'm going to see if the app can match me with one that I actually want to drink.
Yes.
I haven't encountered one quite yet. You're in wine now. You've got to own it. You are a tech guy in wine. WinTech is going to be the new thing. We've developed FinTech. WinTech is going to be the next grouping of this. Coming into this industry, what is the least happy memory you have about maybe just how you were received at a conference or at a tasting or anywhere that you've been in wine where you're like, oh man, these folks suck. Like, they're not getting it. They're not fun. They're not welcoming. Have you had any of those experiences?
Honestly, very little. And I think I also just forget those things. Like,
smart.
Yeah, move on. Sometimes people say, yeah, it's all the naysayers. Like, I don't see a lot of naysayers. I just forget and ignore them. And that's it. So honestly, I'm sure I've had a few of those, but it's not really clear to me. I think I may be outside the wine industry when I told people what I was building, that I was going to build this thing. And then we're going to see if we got like millions of users. Like, people say, yeah, good luck. I mean, it's hard, right?
Yeah.
And very few people succeed. And I think a lot of the outside are like, this guy's building a wine app. He's insane. I did see a lot of that. They didn't say, people are honestly nice, but yeah, I could feel it, like, yeah, this, good luck.
Bet on you, because this definitely worked out great. You felt like your aha wine was this Australian Shiraz. What do you drink nowadays? Like, what do you love drinking? You had the best day ever.
Yeah.
And now you're going to open a bottle of something. What is it?
So I'm going to stay with the styles here, not necessarily go into too many brands, but
yeah,
when we were based in the US, I really enjoyed a lot of caps, honestly. I love those. And then also Pinots. I don't know if I'm a little bit weird on that, but in the early days, I liked a lot of the very sort of new world, very sort of fruity and so on. Really, really enjoyed those. And then over time, I think it's toned down a little bit. And now I like them a little bit more balanced. What I really enjoy now could also be, this is almost too predictable, but like a Burgundy has something that I've started to really enjoy now. I guess I'm getting closer to 50 at this point. So I guess that's why. But also Oregon Pinots, I really enjoyed those.
So good. Yeah. Every time I do look for one on Vivino, it's like people love it. I'm like, yes, drink more of these wines. They're so good. But funny enough, like having that added into the app of where to get it has been helpful, because a lot of those wines are really small producers and not easy to get everywhere. So having that added feature has been amazing.
Yeah. When it comes to ratings and buying wine, with buying wine, like, we have 700 partisans around the world, so we have a great supply. But when it comes to the ratings, something I really want to preach to is that the volume of the ratings means that the small producer in Oregon that no reviewer ever found, like, our users are going to find them.
Yep.
And our users are going to say, this wine is amazing. You need to buy it right now. Even if you can't find it on Vino, this is amazing. You should buy it, right? So I really like the fact that we can give these small winemakers a really, really good push. The people that are passionate about wine and do great stuff.
Yeah, that is a wonderful part to see. And that's kind of how, if your purpose and the overall direction of what you're doing is right, there'll be all these other kind of unintended tokens and gems along the way way that come through. And that's a wonderful part of what we get to do, is just on this journey, pick up things and pick up people that we didn't even intend to bring along, which is awesome. If you're not drinking wine, what is your spirit of choice?
Oh, so I've also really started enjoying spirits, I must say. And I think that's increased over the years. Before I get to that, I'll tell you what I grew up with.
Okay.
So I grew up in a very small place called the Faroe Islands, which is in the middle of the North Atlantic. There was no wine. If there was like a red and a white, that was it. But when you went to a wedding there back in the day, there was beer and there was something called aquavit.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard about that?
Yes.
I think that's fun. That sort of still gets me back. It's pretty aggressive. We take them as shots and so on. So that's it. But anyway, so getting back to what I do now, I really enjoy gin. I love a gin and tonic. And lately, over the last few years, like Negroni has just been sort of a go-to for me. I love Negroni.
Classic, classic, delicious cocktail. I love it. When you think now about like having developed this app, like what was the most challenging? I'm going to end on this part. Take us out with this. Like, what was the most challenging point in developing this that you can think of where you're just like, man, I don't know. Maybe yeah. I wasn't onto something.
Yeah, exactly. Because I always felt like, hey, if I can solve this problem, it's going to be great. The problem is, I don't know if I can solve this. And that's the core of it. That's got taking you back to 2010 to 2012. Like, we're trying to build this data and it's taking forever. And I'm going to clap myself on the shoulder here, but this is what separates sort of the founders to have success and maybe not as successful is that we just kept going. And we kept going and kept going, kept going. And that's what really was the key to our success. Keep building this data, keep building this data. It gets a tiny bit better every single day. And my co-founder, he's a baseball fan, like the only baseball fan in Europe. And what we're doing, it's just like baseball. You got to be good at failing. And the first 2 years, you have to live with the product being pretty bad, but you're improving it. Have faith in that. And I think that was really, really difficult.
Yeah, that's incredible. I mean, that's the spirit of an entrepreneur too, right? Like, no, I'm onto something and I know I'm onto something and I'm not there yet, but I'm going to keep going with this.
Keep pushing, keep pushing.
That is so amazing. I think that people are going to listen to this episode and just have a moment where they didn't even know that they had like this tech love of data. I think we did a good job helping them understand how much data can drive the human experience.
Yeah.
And it doesn't always have to be this very categorized, you know, putting people in buckets type of data. No. The way we learn from data can be very organic and so powerful to growth, to inclusion, to diversification. And I am honored to have been able to spend this time with you and talk about Vivino because it's revolutionary.
It's been a pleasure. Fantastic. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much, guys. I don't even know why I have to say this, but I will. If you have not downloaded Vivino yet, I am a little disappointed in you. But if you haven't downloaded it yet, make sure that you download Vivino. No matter where you are on your wine journey, if you are a super drinker and you drink a lot, you're going to forget something. There is a producer out there that you haven't even tried yet. Use Vivino for that. If you've got a lot of bottles in your house and can't remember what's where and how much of it you have, use it to track your cellar. If you're new to wine and you're tasting, scan all these bottles and take a moment to rate it. Write a little bit about what you feel about it. You'll be surprised to watch the progression of your wine journey. This was an amazing conversation. Thank you again to my guest, founder and CEO of Vivino, Henny Zachariasen. Thank you guys for listening. Oh, do you have social media handles that people can follow you on?
We're Vivino all over. So that is pretty straightforward. So just find us there, obviously on the App Store and Google Play for the app.
Perfect. Thanks so much again for being here. You guys, thank you for tuning in for yet another episode of A Glass for Every Palate. Until next time, drink good, eat good, and celebrate life. Thanks, guys. Oh my goodness, guys, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. We are offering a special gift to all of my amazing listeners. If you haven't subscribed yet, head on over to SomTV.com. Right now, if you enter the code Shakera, S-H-A-K-E-R-A, you will get 50% off your annual membership. And so that makes sure you don't miss any of the amazing content, including a couple things that feature me on SomTV. Head on over to SomTV.com, use code Shakera, and sign up for your yearly subscription now.